So let's go on to the Bhagavad Gita. It's good to see everybody. We have 27 people so far. And this morning, actually, we had a nice class on Visvarupa Mahotsava. Visvarupa, of course, is the brother, the elder brother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, considered to be a expansion of Lord Nityananda. Visvarupa took sannyas while Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little boy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assured his parents that he wasn't going to take sannyas, but actually did take sannyas, of course, a little later, when he was 24. So there's many stories about Visvarupa, which we're not going to tell right now. You can look up that story on my Facebook page, and also all the stories on my Facebook page, and also make reference to the YouTube channel, and hopefully I'll get that posted by this evening. Because it's a very important day, and actually we spoke about sannyas, because that's the tradition for talking about this group when it's, because we're talking about his sannyas. Mahotsava is not his appearance day, but actually his sannyas. Okay, so now we'll go on to the Bhagavad Gita, with everybody's permission. So, Bhagavad Gita, let me get the screen sharing going. We're on the 13th chapter, as everyone remembers, Nature, Enjoyer, and the Consciousness. And we're continuing with text 22. Text 22. And we're going to read it. And this is a text I often make reference to because it explains why we are entangled or why we are an illusion in this material world and basically indirectly indicates how we can get out of illusion and entanglement in this world. Purusha, purusha prakriti sto hi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. So purusha, the living entity, prakriti staha, being situated in the material energy, he certainly bhunte enjoys prakriti jan, produced by the material nature, gunan, the modes of nature, karanam, the cause, guna sangaha, the association with the modes of nature, asya, of the living entity, sat asat, in good and bad, yoni, species of life, janmashu, in births. The living entity of material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. So, as I've explained many times before, that this material energy is something, or everything in this material world is something like wet paint being everywhere. And whatever you touch when there's wet paint, you get on yourself. If there's black wet paint, you get black paint on yourself. If you get red paint, touch red paint, you get red paint on yourself. So there's three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And depending on what type of mode you associate with, or combination of the three modes, because there's many permutations of the combinations of the three modes of material nature. That's why there's infinite varieties, just like there's infinite varieties, and we spoke about this before, infinite varieties of colors that can be produced by the three basic colors. It's just how much of each color you mix with the other colors, and how much white you put in also. And that determines what color you get. So, what combination of modes of nature are there in a particular individual shape a person's consciousness, shape a person's material body, shape of the body that someone will get in his next life? These modes of nature are all pervasive. So there are certain things that exude certain modes of nature, certain activities that exude certain modes of nature, certain people who exude certain modes of nature, certain times of the day that exude certain modes of nature, certain types of food that exudes certain modes of nature, certain times of the day that manifest different modes of nature. So it's good to be aware of these modes of nature. I mean, just to give an example of food. Food that is tasteless, stale, decomposed, putrid. That's in reference to meat and stuff like that. That's food in the mode of ignorance. food that is too spicy or too hot, hot tamales, that's an emotive passion. Because it causes sickness. And food that gives life and creates muscles and allows you to develop the proper flesh in your body and allows you to develop the finer brain tissues so you can think about the science of Krishna consciousness, that's food in the mode of goodness. And you have music in different modes of nature, and I'm not going to describe what type of music is in what modes of nature because some people may get very offended with me. And because I'll be criticizing their favorite music as being in the mode of ignorance. Sorry about that. So, anyway, so, and people, too. Like if you associate with a particular politician who should remain nameless, you will be in the mode of ignorance with a little touch of passion. Little touch of passion. And if you associate with a pure devotee, you rise above the modes. That is, if you associate with Prabhupada and read his purports and translations and read his books, then Sagunan Samatichai Tan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, as described in the Gita, Mamchiyo Bhyavacharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate. Sagunan Samatichai Tan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. That if one performs devotional service, especially association with a great devotee, then Bhakti Yogena Sevate, Sagunan Samatichai Tan, he overcomes the modes of nature and becomes situated in Brahman, which is above the modes of nature. So the pure devotee, such as Srila Prabhupada, exudes the bhakti shakti and the transcendental Vishuddha sattva. Even by being in the presence of such a great devotee, one becomes influenced by that energy. Or taking the foot bathing dust, eating the foot bathing dust, or drinking the foot bathing water, or eating the prasadam remnants, it has the same effect. So everything is due to association. For example, Lord Chaitanya one time was asked about the qualities of a Vaishnava. And the first thing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu answered was the satsanga jage Vaishnava char. That the first quality of a Vaishnava is that he avoids bad association. And the second quality is, you know, sadhu sangha, sarva sastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi koi, is that he associates with good association. You know, bad association means people are against Krishna, people are just too much into materialistic pursuits, and good association means those who love Krishna. Simple as that. So everything's due to association. Prabhupada would often give the example that if you associate with drunkards, of course nowadays a drunkard would be considered extremely pious compared to many of the people who are taking other substances. But if you associate with drunkards, you become a drunkard. If you associate with businessmen, eventually you'll become a businessman. So everything depends on your association. And we see that sometimes with the workers we have here doing construction, that while they're here, at not in the temple building, but doing construction on some of the outlying buildings in the temple, they're pretty good. You know, we give them prasadam and everything like that. Of course, it's hard to keep them from smoking. Yeah, and they're associating with devotees. They're a little bit bright-faced. But as soon as they leave the grounds and they go back home to their wonderful families that are all getting intoxicated, as they say, the family that gets intoxicated together stays together. No, not really. So as soon as they go back to their families, then they fall back into their ordinary modes of nature. But while they're here, they actually feel sort of very light. Not exactly Krishna conscious, but lighter. So Prabhupada said, this verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entity transmigrates from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. Remember that verse? Vasanti Jiranani Yathar Vihaya. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material desire, the living entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of the circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. Now, one thing I want to explain is the way that someone becomes a bug or a beast or a bird or a worm or a cockroach or any of those other nice creatures is that previously that living entity was in the human form of life. Because to become, let's say, a creature or a plant or any sort of entity in a lower species of life, one has to do something bad as a human being, because the human being or the human form of life is the junction. Because only in the human form of life can one accrue karma. Remember that word, accrue. Now that's a fancy word for getting karma by your actions, okay? So only in the human form of life can one accrue karma. In other forms of life, you work off karma. Got the difference? A dog cannot accrue karma, no matter what a dog does, because it doesn't have the ability to just say no. As Nancy Reagan used to say, he doesn't have the ability to make ethical judgments. I mean, even a child doesn't have that ability. It was an interesting discussion sometimes we have with Christians that they say we can eat animals because animals don't have this higher discriminatory power. And then I usually say to them, does that mean we can eat children, babies, because they don't have the higher discriminatory power. And they don't know what to say about that. So anyway, so animals cannot discriminate between right and wrong, should I or shouldn't I. It's basically eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Anyway, we all know the joke about a dog. A dog will either pass urine on you to mark, that's a defense strategy to mark his territory. He'll fight with you, or if you're a female dog, he'll have sex with you. So all the activities of the lower species of life are basically just being forced according to their particular nature, under the modes of nature. And they don't have the ability to discriminate. So they cannot accrue karma. Whereas in the human form of life, we can accrue karma. So therefore, getting to the point, that each and every living entity, hog, dog, camel, asset, whatever, has done something as a human being to deserve to be put into that species of life. Your friendly little cat, for example, was previously a human being. That's why he got the karma to become a cat, or to become a dog, or to become a pet lizard. Previously a human being. He just messed up in the human form of life. Because the human form of life is meant for self-realization. And as they say often, you either use it or lose it. If you don't use your inherent capability for self-realization, then you don't need it. You put into a lower species of life where you can attempt to enjoy. Like probably, I was just listening to, excuse me if you don't like this example, but it's Prabhupada. I'm just listening to Prabhupada memory. And Prabhupada was walking in, where is he walking? Oh, he was walking in Vrindavan. And then he came across a pig. And the pig just got out of the muddy hole or sewer or whatever the pig was in. And Prabhupada said, in a very interesting fashion, he said, when I was in New York, I would go sometimes to the library. There's a big, big public library on 42nd Street in Manhattan. And Prabhupada said they had millions of books just on sex life, you know, romance. Okay. And whether that was an exaggeration or not, it's hard to say because, you know, most of these books have, at least novels, they have something to do with that. And also, you know, these psychology books have something to do with that. And then Prabhupada pointed out to the pig, he said, the pig, he didn't have to read any books and he has no inhibitions. He didn't have to sit in a couch and read about or speak about his childhood experiences to Sigmund Freud. I mean, probably speaking in a very humorous fashion. Anyway, so the human form of life is the junction point. So we got to decide what we want to be in our next lives. And we can decide that through our actions and consciousness. So, okay. This is going on. In all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. Typical example, we've given this example before, is that once upon a time, Indra, the heavenly administrator, was put into a pig body because he had committed offenses. And as a pig body, he thought himself the master. You know, he was a male pig, and he had a family of piglets and a pig wife. Sorry about that. And he refused to go back to the heavenly planets because he said, you know, I'm the master, I'm responsible, I'm the maintainer. Of course, we know that Krishna is the maintainer. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yogadadati. Come on, Krishna's the maintainer of everybody. As soon as we fall into this consciousness that the world is dependent on me, we have to do our duty, yes. We're not saying to people, we're not prescribing the neglect of one's duty in this world. Yes, we have to stick to our duties. But in the same time, we should have the consciousness that I'm not actually the maintainer of anyone. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yogadadati kama. The statement is there are many eternal living entities. There is one supreme eternal living entity who is Krishna. And that supreme eternal living entity is maintaining all the plural living entities such as ourselves. Anyway, so the problem is that we think ourselves to be the master of our circumstances. That's pretty foolish. And Krishna allows us to think like that because that's our desire. How he has put it, and also it is a perverted reflection of how the Supreme Lord feels, because the Supreme Lord is the master of all of his circumstances. So we are just reflecting that as tiny parts and parcels of the Lord, whereas we are not the master of our lives. How he has put it into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association, listen to this, with the different modes of nature. One has to rise, therefore, above the three material modes and become situated in the transcendental position. That is called Krishna consciousness. Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desires since time immemorial. Let's be very clear on how one transfers. What's the process by which one transfers or determines what the future body, our future body, will be? There's two mechanisms that determine what type of body where we're going to be born. One is our karma, and the other one is our desire. Got it? So desire comes from the association of modes of material nature. Karma comes from the activities that we performed before. So oftentimes I compare karma, whether you have good karma or bad karma, to our bank account, and desire to the desire to for how we want to spend our money. For example, if you want a car, two things determine what type of car you will get. The money, which is compared to the karma, and your desire. Yeah. If you have a desire for a car, you know, a nice car, at least a red car, let's say a red car. You want a red car, but you have no money, then you'll get a very cheap, used red car with rust. And if you have a desire for a red car, and you have good, a lot of money, then you'll probably get a Maserati or a Lamborghini or whatever, or at least a Tesla. So the same way, if we have a lot of good karma, and you really desire to be romantic, then you'll be born perhaps as the let's say, Prince of England or something like that, and you will have romance, whatever that means. I'm a sannyasi, I don't know what it means. So you'll have that. And if you have bad karma and you want to be romantic, you will be born as a bird who can have romantic flings 50 times a day, especially a pigeon, which Prabhupada commented on. Okay. So, but he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The example, the best example is here. Arjuna. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature. And gradually and proportionally, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. So if you submit to the hearing process, I mean, have like really submissive hearing. What is submissive hearing? We allow the sound vibration to go from our ear to our heart. Devanti Vidkarna, Rasayana Kata, Chajoshana Dasha, Apavarga Vartmanishwara, Vatira Bhakti Anukramishati. Then the heart becomes purified and you lose your desire to dominate because there's no happiness in dominating. I mean, who wants to be in charge? It's actually more anxiety. And when we take a position in the Krishna Conscious Movement, whether it's president, GBC, or something like that, it's a responsibility. Just like I'm GBC. Tomorrow morning, we're having a GBC meeting online, Zoom. And one could think, yeah, I'm one of the bosses here. I'm in charge. But I'm just thinking, this is my service to Prabhupada. I'm a servant, and this is the service I'm rendering. This service is no better than any other service. It's no better than the service of cleaning the toilets in the temple, washing the floor in the temple, doing any other service for Krishna. It's not that it means that I'm necessarily any better. It just means that Prabhupada has given me the service. That's all. So as long as we see ourselves as servants, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Gopi Varta Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasana Dasa, then we can avoid this whole tendency to dominate. You think that we're the boss. In the Vedic mantra, it is said that as he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he proportionally relishes his eternal blissful life. Because as long as you're trying to dominate, you're in anxiety. How can you enjoy bliss? And that's really what we want. We want to be happy. We want to be happy. And many people, they try to dominate because they're insecure. But when you understand that Krishna is always protecting you, Krishna is always maintaining you, which are two of the surrendering principles listed by Lord Chaitanya, then there's no more insecurity. Like even if everyone hates you, thinks you're stupid, doesn't like you, who cares? You have Krishna. If you have Krishna, then why do you care about what other people think? But people are so concerned with reputation. Oh my God, reputation. And they put on an air, they put on an act of being something they're not. It's like the story in The Wizard of Oz, right? Wizard of Oz. Anyway, The Wizard of Oz was just a pretender. I can tell the whole story. Also, it's like the story of the King's New Clothes. You know that story? Anyway, I'll tell it real quickly. Once upon a time, the king went to a tailor. He was supposed to be the best tailor in the kingdom. And he said, can you make me some nice clothes? And the tailor said, I will make you clothes so wonderful, so spiritual, so esoteric and mystical that people who are dumb will not see those clothes. Or unqualified will not see the clothes, but people who are intelligent will see the clothes. Okay. And so the tailor may believe he's going to get to work. And then and about a week or two later, the king went to the tailor's shop. The tailor gave him what he thought was clothes, but was just air. And the king, so-called, put them on. The king didn't see anything because he thought, you know, this means I am dumb as a doornail. And so the king didn't want to admit it. So he so-called put on the clothes, but he was actually naked. So the king went on his chariot through the streets in a ticker tape parade, or people were throwing flowers, and the king was naked in his chariot. And everybody knew that if they didn't see the clothes, they were considered to be dumb. So nobody wanted to admit it, except for one little kid. And the kid said, "What? The king's naked." And then everyone said, "You. How can this kid be considered dumb for his particular position?" So that's the story. So we shouldn't be fooled by what's called cognitive dissonance. What does it mean, cognitive dissonance? That means we have some belief about something, and the belief conflicts with observable reality. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, some people think this COVID virus is just a scam. Okay, that's their belief. Then they see people dying. And so there's a dissonance, you know, conflict between what they see and what they believe. Oh my God. And so many times they just stick with what they believe. Or if they see a politician who's lying, who would put Pinocchio to shame, they're in denial about it because they think this politician is the greatest thing since Swiss cheese. You know, he's God's gift to humankind. Even you hear ministers talking about that. So anyway, so that's called cognitive dissonance. So sometimes we believe something about ourselves that's not true. We believe that we're great devotees, transcendental, whatever. And basically, you know, we're just like, can't control the tongue. You know, that's the worst one. Or maybe it's not the worst. Anyway, we can't control the tongue. We can't think of Krishna, but we believe that we're great devotees. That's a type of cognitive dissonance. The cognition there is what we observe in ourselves, and there's a dissonance with what we believe in as ourselves, or who we believe we are. So it's better to be honest with yourself. Honesty with yourself is actually the most important thing. Anyway, so that's humility. And when one has that humility, getting back to the point, then one can hear submissively with one's heart. If one is always in a challenging mood, I know better, then one will never be able to hear. So humility means what does that mean? More tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. And then you can hear, it says in that verse, hear the holy name constantly, or chant the holy name constantly. You can also hear Bhagavatam. Okay, next verse. Upadrastanumantacha Bharta Bhokta Maheshvaraha Paramatmeti Chapyukto Dehismin Purusha Paraha. So Upadrashta, the overseer, Anumanta, permitter, cha, also, Bharta, master, Bhokta, supreme enjoyer, Mahaishvara, the supreme lord, Parama Atma, the super soul, Iti, also, cha, and api, indeed, Uktaha, is said, Dehi, in the body, Asmin, this, Purushaha, enjoyer, Paraha, transcendental. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as Super Soul. That, of course, is Paramatma, which we talked about, or who we talked about many times before. An expansion of the Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, who's situated in everyone's heart, who's situated in every atom, and also on the shore of the Milk Ocean, Ashveta Deep. So, he is in everyone's heart. Of course, we mentioned before, as he is mentioned in 13th chapter, that he appears to be many, but he's one. Just like the reflection of the moon in many bodies of water is a manifestation of the moon, which appears to be many, but actually the moon is one. So in the same way, the Paramatma, his presence is there in one sense, but he's never in touch with matter. So it's a manifestation of him that's directly dealing. It's not just a television image, but it's a manifestation of Paramatma, of Shirdaksha Vishnu, who directly deals with us personally, giving us intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness. We'll find out about that when we read the 15th chapter of the Gita. And so he's the real enjoyer, the proprietor, as we mentioned in the Isopanishad, Ishavashamidam Sagam. And he is the permitter and overseer of all our activities. He permits us to do things sometimes that are not good for us. Why? Because he's given us this free will. So sometimes we have to learn from the school of hard knocks. That's for less intelligent people. More intelligent people learn by hearing. Less intelligent people learn by doing. So you choose. You can read the Vedic literatures, learn from them, and avoid the pitfalls that are normally there in this material world. Or you can read the Vedic literatures and not learn from them and go through all the pitfalls, or you could not read the Vedic literatures, and therefore you won't learn from them anyway, and not avoid the pitfalls, and after a while you will say, well, either the Vedic literatures were right, or there's something going wrong in this material world. So, it is stated here that the super soul, who is always with the individual soul, is the representation of the Supreme Lord. He is not an ordinary living entity. Because the Manas philosophers, that means people think that we are God, take the knower of the body to be one. They think that there is no difference between the super soul and the individual soul. To clarify this, the Lord says that he is represented as the Paramatma in every body. He is different from the individual soul. He is para, transcendental. The individual soul enjoys the activities of a particular field, but the super soul is present not as finite enjoyer, nor is one taking part in bodily activities, but as the witness, overseer, permitter, and supreme enjoyer. His name is Paramatma, not Atma. Atma means like the soul. Paramatma means the supreme soul, and he is transcendental. It is distinctly clear that the Atma and Paramatma are different. So the example given in the Upanishads, it's like two birds, you heard this before, one tree, one bird is enjoying the fruits of the tree, the other bird is just looking at him, waiting for that one bird who is enjoying to turn back to him. So Krishna is just waiting for us to turn back to him. The super soul, the Paramatma, has legs and hands everywhere. We heard about this in the chapter, same chapter, chapter 13. But the individual soul does not. We have hands and legs, it's true, but not everywhere. And because the Paramatma is the Supreme Lord, he is present within to sanction the individual soul's desiring material enjoyment. Without the sanction of the Supreme Soul, the individual soul cannot do anything. The individual is bhukta, or the sustained, and the Lord is bhukta, or the maintainer. There are innumerable living entities, and he is staying in them as a friend. The fact is that every individual living entity is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and both of them are very intimately related as friends. Very nice. And actually, you hear this in the... As friends. But you hear this in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the famous verse, 529, Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokanaheshram, Suradam Sarvabodhanam, Gatva Mam Shantim Richati, in which Krishna says, one should understand that I am the enjoyer Bhaktaram Jagata of all sacrifice. Sarva Lokamaheshram, the Lord of all worlds, Bhutanam, I am the friend. Suradam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of all living entities. And one who understands this can truly become peaceful. But the living entity has the tendency to reject the sanction of the Supreme Lord and act independently in an attempt to dominate nature. And because he has this tendency, he is called the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity can be situated either in the material energy or in the spiritual energy. We described this before. We are marginal, the marginal potency. We're right. We are spiritual. We are tata pura. We are spiritual, but because we are small spiritual, we can forget about our spiritual nature by being covered by the material energy. As long as he is conditioned by the material energy, the Supreme Lord, as his friend, the Super Soul, stays with him just to get him to return to the spiritual energy. In other words, as long as we're here, Super Soul stays with us, just waiting for us to come back and trying to guide us to come back. The Lord is always eager to take him back to the spiritual energy. But due to his minute independence, the individual entity is continually rejecting the association of spiritual life. This misuse of independence is the cause of his material strife in the conditioned nature. The Lord, therefore, is always giving instruction from within and from without. This is interesting. From without, he gives instructions, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, and from within, he tries to convince the living entity that his activities in the material field are not conducive to real happiness. So in other words, from without, we not only have the Bhagavad Gita, we have the spiritual master, we have other Vedic literatures, we have other great saints, and even experiences in this material world. As they say, you can't get no satisfaction. So, but within, Krishna is actually giving us the intelligence eventually, when we desire it, that there's no happiness in this material world. And when we understand that there's no happiness in this material world, we cry out for God. When we cry out for God, God sends his representative, spiritual master. Just give it up. Turn your faith to me. Then you will be happy, he says, Krishna says. Thus, the intelligent person who places his faith in the Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, begins to advance toward a blissful, eternal life of knowledge. Next verse. Okay. So, next verse. If we can finish this verse. Ya evam veti purusham prakritim chagunai saha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuya vijayate. Ya, anyone who, evam, thus, veti, understands, purusham, the living entity, prakritim, material nature, cha, and gunai, the modes of material nature, saha, with, sarvata, in all ways, vartamanaha, being situated, api, in spite of, na, never, sa, he, bhuyaha, again, abhijayate, takes his birth. One who understands this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of nature is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. In other words, this is called sambandha gyan. Sambandha gyan means to understand these different elements, material nature, the living entity, and the modes of nature, part of material nature, then you will not be reborn once you understand this philosophy. That's sambandha gyan. Because once you have sambandha gyan, understanding the Lord, material nature, the living entities, the modes of nature, time, karma, then you will do something called abhideya. Abhideya means you'll start to practice devotional service. And by doing this practice of devotional service, beginning with Vaidhi sadhana bhakti to Raghunuga sadhana bhakti to Bhava bhakti and finally Prema bhakti, and then at that point you come to Prayojana, the ultimate goal of life. So there's three aspects of knowledge. We talked about this many times before. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Here, Sambandha is mentioned. This Sambandha is necessary to get you to a higher level in devotional service. Once you've actually understood it, that doesn't mean you've memorized it, you've gone to some course. You've understood. The word, or the operative word in this phrase, is understands this philosophy. Understanding means jnana and vijnana, not just rote learning, but application. And then you don't take birth again in this material world, regardless of where you are, who you are, what your race is, what your gender is, what your nationality is. At the Godhead. Purport. Clear understanding of the material nature of the supersoul, the individual soul, and their interrelation makes one eligible to become liberated and turn to the spiritual atmosphere without being forced to return to this material nature. This is the result of knowledge. The purpose of knowledge is to understand distinctly that the living entity has, by chance, fallen into this material existence. By his personal endeavor in association with authorities, saintly persons, and a spiritual master, he has to understand his position and then revert. It's an interesting word Prabhupada uses here. Revert to spiritual consciousness. Revert means return. That means previously he was Krishna conscious or spiritually conscious. And then revert to spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness by understanding Bhagavad Gita as it is explained by the personality of God. Then it is certain that he will never come again into this material existence. He will be transferred into the spiritual world for a blissful, eternal life of knowledge. So I think we'll end here so that this text, let's mark it down. That was text 24, so we did 22 to 24 today. So now we can take some questions. Hold on a second. Now's the time to present your objections. So you are unmuted. You can make sure the screen is also unmuted. Hold on a second. And, okay. So who has a question? Nobody has a question.
I have a question.
Oh.
Well,
oh, two people spoke.
I'll go last.
Okay, Jeremiah, you're last. Okay, so Gopal Kohan Das.
So you mentioned as long as Krishna is pleased, we don't have to care if everyone hates us.
That's right. Unless we're preaching, and then we could be concerned with transmitting Lord Krishna's message. But it's not a personal consideration. Because a devotee is free from this subtle sex life. What is subtle sex life? Profit, adoration, distinction, right?
Yeah.
So personally, yes, we don't care. But we can care insofar as spreading Krishna consciousness. But if it has nothing to do with Krishna or Krishna's service, then people hating us may be helpful to advancement and devotional service. Just like the case, who is it? Give me some cases from the Shastra.
Six Goswamis.
No, they didn't hate them. Lord what?
Lord
Rishabhadev. Lord Rishabhadev. People were, I wouldn't use the word hate, but they just thought he was crazy, right? And they were throwing things at him. They were passing air in front of him. And God knows what else they were doing in front of him. I mean, they just like, I wouldn't use the word hate, but there was some animosity towards him. And they weren't respecting him. And also in the case of Jatabharta, he acted stupid so that nobody would ask him to get a job and go to the bank. Anyway, so nobody would ask him to bargain to buy something. Anyway, so that's an inside joke. So he acted, sorry about that one. So he acted stupid so he could just concentrate on Krishna's pastimes because at a previous birth, he actually thought he knew something that he didn't. You know, he was proud, and he started taking care of a deer, and he took birth as a deer because he thought, you know, he was all right. So he became humble. His acting stupid helped him with his humility. He acted so stupid that his brothers put him out to be a scarecrow in the field. So as far as oneself, you know, even if everybody thinks we're jerks, personally, not as far as preaching, don't even bring preaching into the equation, then that's even helpful to Krishna consciousness, because it helps us become detached from profit, adoration, distinction. Normally, we really want to be the cynosure of all eyes, right? All the world's a stage and everyone upon it is a player. Not you, of course, but, you know, everybody else. So we'd like to be the center. I remember when I was born, I don't remember, but I mean, when I was born, I was the center of attention, and I was so incredibly happy because everything I did, every time I burped, it was just like some of the cutest thing that anyone could imagine. Until my brother was born, then I was just an unnecessary appendage. Anyway, so not really, but I was definitely didn't get the attention I wanted. So sometimes when we're put in a situation that helps us, I mean, we have to see what's helpful for our Krishna consciousness. But basically, sticks and stones will break our bones, but names will never hurt us. So basically, a devotee is a manina manadena. What does that mean? Not expecting any respect. Of course, if one is not a pure devotee, just on the other hand, if one is not a pure devotee, we cannot force one into that particular position. And so we may arrange to give a particular devotee some respect, or we can appreciate them genuinely, but we may arrange to give a particular devotee some material things just to encourage them in devotional service. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, to make a devotee, you have to give them balam rice with ghee in it. You know that story? Balam rice with ghee means that someone is not pure right now, so you just got to give them a lot of, like when I joined the movement, a lot of stuff with ghee in it. I'll tell the story. Once upon a time, there was a man who couldn't keep a servant because he was a little nasty towards a servant. And he asked his friend, how can I keep servant? And the man said, his friend, said that you can keep a servant by giving him this, like basmati rice with ghee in it, for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then he'll never forget you. So for 2 or 3 weeks, the guy fed him basmati rice with ghee. And then he yelled at the servant. Servant ran away, but came back after 2 hours. So the moral of the story, is that we're talking about, you know, when one experiences disrespect, it being helpful for his spiritual life, that may not apply for a neophyte devotee. How about that? For a neophyte devotee may need some respect just to feel encouraged. But for an advanced devotee, he will take advantage of any situation, such as a situation in which he receives no respect. In the 1960s, there was one politician who was always talking about how he got a humorist, a comic, who was always talking about how he got no respect. Anyway, don't tell me his name, it's not pious. But anyway, Rodney Dangerfield. And so he was always talking about how I got no respect, and you tell all these stories about getting no respect. And he made a living doing it. So you can make a living. So the whole point is ultimately a manina manadena, not expecting or needing any respect, but ready to give all respect to others. And that is perfection in Krishna consciousness. However, we want people to respect us when we're representing Krishna. That's why Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, so the people would listen to him rather than criticize him. So there's two sides to that equation right there. You know, it's really complicated.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, what's the follow-up question?
So if we're actually living in the association of devotees, the majority of our association is with Vaishnavas, then shouldn't we take their feelings about us as feedback as to how we're doing in Krishna consciousness?
Yes, they're constructive criticism. Yeah, we can take it as...
Hate us.
Well, if they hate us, that means someone who hates is not a very advanced Vaishnava. They're on the Kanishna level.
But at least if you have...
Hate is not part of the Majjhima Adhikari consciousness or the Uttama consciousness.
Yeah. Okay, so even if they don't hate us, but if they give us, you know, consistent feedback...
Well, that's feedback. They may love us and give us consistent feedback. I'm talking about hate, and I'm not talking about feedback. Feedback, we take it as Krishna speaking to us. Now, we also have to use our own sense of judgment as to whether it is applicable in our case or not. It's not that everything anyone says, we take. For example, when Prabhupada was very sick in the early days of the movement, they called for a Jewish doctor, to see Prabhupada, because it was Sunday, they couldn't find anyone else. And Dr. Kong, that's true. And you know what? The first thing he said was really funny. Swamiji, you chant too much. Swamiji's always chanting. He's chanting too much. But Prabhupada didn't take that seriously. But then he said, Swamiji, you should walk. You're just here in this room. You should walk. You should exercise every day. And he took it seriously. Because this guy was not envious. He was just trying to help Prabhupada. So we devotees take constructive criticism very seriously. But if someone hates us, and it's easy to see, you know, if someone really hates us, it's not a problem. I have a little app in my phone. It's called a hate gauge. And I just put it in front of someone. It's like a dial, a meter. So anyway, hateometer. So if someone really hates us, that's an indication that we don't have to take it seriously because they're either not on a level of devotional service or they're on the Kanishta Adhikari level. Because Majjhima Adhikari doesn't hate anyone. Majjhima Adhikari makes friends with the devotees, helps the innocent, avoids the envious, doesn't hate the envious. Because a devotee is a real devotee, because real devotional service begins with the Majjhima platform. I mean, you could say, yes, the Kanishta, we offer respects in our mind because they're chanting, but the Majjhima platform begins the actual devotional service. And on the Majjhima platform, one is a preacher, one is compassionate. And one has to tolerate. Look at Lord Nityananda. How he tolerated Jagai and Madai. And he actually took it as a test. He got down on his hands and knees before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and begged that Lord Chaitanya would forgive them. Haridas Thakur, who we were talking about the other day, he was concerned with the welfare of the Muslims who were attacking him. Haridas Thakur was compassionate to the prostitute. Imagine, let's say if someone came to stop you, let's say your rabbi came to stop you from chanting Hare Krishna and he condemned you to be whipped in 22 Walmarts. So well, marketplaces, you know, whatever, or Amazon or whatever. But anyway, so let's say he condemned you to be whipped in 22 marketplaces. How would you feel towards the person whipping you? You want to answer that? No.
Honestly?
Honestly.
I fight back.
Yeah, you know, but if you couldn't fight back, you would be thinking, I hope, you know, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I hope Krishna really smashes these guys later on, maybe. No, I mean, you'd be compassionate. You'd be just praying for their welfare and like that. I don't know. But the point is that Haridas Thakur was very tolerant. So that's a devotee. A devotee is very tolerant. A devotee has no enemies. A devotee doesn't have this word hate in his dictionary. you know, or he may hate it when he's in Maya, but I mean, he doesn't hate another person. Because he sees everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. The Upanishad teaches us, what is that? Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanapashati sarvabhuteshu chatmana tatona vigagupshate. The one who is Krishna conscious sees everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. He doesn't hate anyone or anything. So a devotee takes advantage of anything negative that happens to him. Let's get to the point. And he thinks that I deserve to have this done to me. What is that? Tatenam kampam sushamikshamanavat bunjanavat makritam vipakam vidbhadvapurvirvidanam namaste jivetuyo mukti puresa dayabak. This is just a token reaction. This person hates me, but it's a token reaction. He doesn't consider the other person to be his enemy. It's a token reaction for my past sinful activities, like Dharma the bull was thinking, like when he saw Kali, when he felt Kali attacking him. And then he goes on serving Krishna in spite of all those token reactions or supposed token reactions that he's experiencing. I mean, it's a high level of devotional service. I'm not saying that everybody has to immediately be on that level of devotional service, but that's how a pure devotee experiences things. Isn't it? So.
You say so.
I say so. Queen Kunti says so. Please let these difficulties happen again and again so I can no longer see birth and death. What is that? Tatra, tatra, jagat guru, apunar, bhavadarshanam. I don't want to see repeated birth and death anymore. So if these difficulties come, I'm not asking for more difficulties. I'm quoting Queen Kunti. This is not my words, believe me. I have to clarify that in front of Krishna. It's not my words. It's not me speaking. Krishna, it's Queen Kunti. So anyway, so one just has to see like that. I mean, we're going to be confronted with so many difficulties. Adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic miseries. Miseries from the body and mind. Miseries from other living entities. Miseries from the material nature. And we just have to see them as tests by Krishna. And not hate anyone. And take it as a stepping stone to become advanced in devotional service. You know, if someone says, I don't like you, I mean, depending on who says that, then we just try to take it as a stepping stone, be tolerant. I mean, Krishna will send that to all of us. I mean, it's guaranteed Krishna's going to send people who don't like us.
Shouldn't we also be reflective, internally reflective, and see, you know, what have I done to cause discomfort to this living entity?
Yeah, but if someone is saying, I hate you, then we don't take it as seriously as someone saying, you're causing me discomfort. It's a little bit different.
You know, if someone says they hate you, isn't that the subtext?
Not necessarily. I think hate is not in a Vaishnava's dictionary. If someone says, I really hate that person, I don't know, I wouldn't think about it too much. If someone says, I don't like what you do or did, that's another thing. There's a difference. Someone could say, I hate what you did. I hate that you cooked the offering horribly this morning. Then you take it seriously. You may have to learn how to cook for Krishna. But if someone says, I hate you, I don't know about that. I may think about it, but it's not coming from someone who's very advanced in devotional service.
Thank you.
Okay. So one other question. Question, comment. Someone else was asking a question in the beginning.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
So, in the last text, I was speaking about one who understands this knowledge.
Yeah.
Does not take and the cycle of birth and death. And my question is this. Would the spontaneous love for Krishna be considered the aftermath of when one begins to understand the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, or would that be more of the, I don't know, my wording is very clear.
Yes, no, I understand what you're saying. You hit upon a very good point, one that I was trying to make. Yes, it's not simply understanding it, but it's the aftermath or what comes because one has understood it. Does that answer the question?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think so. And then I think in a different part of the Gita, Krishna says if one can't have spontaneous love for me, then you should practice the disciplines of bhakti yoga.
Yeah. 12th chapter. Yeah.
So it's an essence, a gradual progression, understanding and a longing to develop one's devotional
yes.
service platform of.
Yes, you're right. Absolutely. That's a very good point. And what Krishna is indicating, that the devotional journey, in the verse that we were talking about, the devotional journey begins with the first step. So one who understands the difference or the nature of these things, that's the first step. And therefore, necessarily because one has understood those things, he will take the following steps and actually, which indicates sadhana bhakti and, you know, all the other aspects of bhakti and become Krishna conscious and ultimately love Krishna. Because you're absolutely right. It is a prerequisite that one has to love Krishna 100% to go back to Godhead. It's not enough just to understand in truth those things. But understanding in truth those things, the material nature, the modes of nature, and the living entity, and Krishna, of course, will actually impel one to take the other necessary steps.
Okay, Prabhu. So the art of bhakti, in essence, is the pure victory rites of which purifies the soul to get to back to its original state of love of Krishna?
Yes. Yeah, the purificatory process, which is chanting Hare Krishna purely in this day and age, that is bhakti yoga. However, a important foundation for that is what is described in the verse that you're making reference to, what's called sambandha gyan, knowing specifically what the material nature is, what the spiritual nature is, what time is, what karma is, and who the living entity, what the living entity is. These are foundational principles that are called in Sanskrit sambandha. Sambandha means just basic theoretical information of those different factors. And based upon that theoretical information, if one understands them in truth, or fully, as Krishna says in this verse, one actually will take the further steps and will go back to Godhead. But the further steps are necessary to answer your question. It's a good question you asked. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu. You're the one who brought it about. I'm very grateful.
thank you.
First step.
Yeah, that's the first step. Where are you, Jeremiah? What in the United States? Where?
I'm at the ISKCON Orlando Temple.
Oh, ISKCON Orlando. Oh, yeah. So, because I added you to my contact list. That's right. And thank you for joining us.
Hare.
Haribo. We're having this class every day at 5:00, and so you have some. See, whatever's practical, thank you. So, and one other question from someone, anyone who wants to ask a question. Oh, nobody wants to ask
a question.
Oh, okay. Raja Leela. Why don't you change the name on your account to Raja Leela?
Should. Except I use it for school, too.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering, I'm sure that the answer is just a chant, but how are we able to become closer to Paramatma and like turn around and see the other bird?
Ah, okay. How do you get closer to Paramatma? That's actually very good. Well,
you
know what I mean? Yeah, how do you get closer to Paramatma?
Consciousness.
Yeah, well, the way to get closer to Paramatma is to try to understand what he's saying to you. Like, the way to get closer to anyone is to try to understand what they want, what they say. And so Paramatma is speaking directly to us through another means, which is the spiritual master. So the way we get closer to Paramatma is we listen to there's two gurus. Sorry, let me just backtrack. There's Chaita Guru, the guru in the heart, and the actual guru, the external guru. And they're both saying the same thing. So if one listens submissively to the spiritual master, of course, that may be an advertisement for myself in this particular case. But anyway, if one listens submissively to the spiritual master, then one is actually beginning to hear the Paramatma in the heart. And once you begin to hear the Paramatma in the heart, then Krishna reveals himself. And also, when one becomes dedicated, Prabhupada makes this point in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, if one is dedicated to the, let us say, the mission of the spiritual master, Paramatma actually directly reveals himself to one. Does that answer the question? Yes, good. All right, there was one other question. Someone else was fighting for... Who was that? Someone else was wanting to speak? No. I guess not. Okay. So, we're ending. So thank you very much. We're going to have another class tomorrow at 5 o'clock East Coast time, United States, and you figure out what time it is wherever you are. We have devotees from New Zealand here. We have devotees from North Carolina, and there's some devotees on Facebook, because I'm looking on Facebook separately, from Fiji and from Australia. Very nice. So we have a big crew here tonight. We have 16 devotees watching on Facebook, and right now 29:30 watching on Zoom. Okay, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. How do you go? Okay, we had to broadcast on Facebook separately because it didn't interact with Zoom so favorably, so we'll see everybody later.